Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Barry Habib. Barry is an American entrepreneur and frequent media resource for his mortgage and housing insight. Barry has had a long tenure with monthly appearances for CNBC and Fox. Barry is the CEO of MBS Highway, a company and platform created to help interpret and forecast activity in the mortgage rate and bond markets. Barry has had many successful businesses that he has founded, grown, and sold. This includes Mortgage Market Guide, Healthcare Imaging Solutions, and Certified Mortgage Associates. Barry's mortgage sales career includes being recognized for having the highest annual origination production in the United States on two occasions. Barry personally originated over $2 billion in mortgage loan production over his career. Barry, thank you for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
We had kind of covered the industry as far as some of the policies that dictate lending and homeownership and all that. It's interesting. We have the lowest rate of homeownership going back for a little spot in the 90s and all the way back to the 60s. And it coincides when we have this phenomenal interest rate to where you could sign up and have a fixed payment that would be very attractive for a very long time. And one of the things that in looking at interest rates, we have an odd combination to me, and this is what kind of piqued my interest. I look at an unemployment chart, it says it's about 5%, and I look at a 10-year T-bill, and it's about 1.75-ish. Those two charts don't usually go together. If you have a 5% unemployment chart, your 10-year T-bill isn't saying one something. And this time it is. So I guess, first of all, and you're much more experienced maybe in length of these charts, how unusual is it to have anything under a 2% 10-year T-bill, especially when paired with a 5% unemployment?
Extraordinarily low just to have a 2% handle on a 10-year T-bill, or under 2% 10-year T-bill. In fact, the all-time low is 1.39%. And if we go back to February of this year, we had challenged that a bit. We got down to 1.54%. So we've had some extraordinarily low rates on the 10-year T-bill. But there are different circumstances that exist. You know, it's not just tied to the rate of unemployment. And look, we can argue with the rate of unemployment that while there are less unemployed, the workforce has a very low labor participation rate, right? So you have a lot of people that are not in the labor force right now. You can come up with whatever reasons that may be. Maybe it's the entitlement that they're able to garner that is keeping them away from having to work. But also, if you take a look at the hourly earnings that we see, it isn't as if we have grown that much, because if you were to measure inflation-adjusted hourly earnings today, or what a family is earning today, households earning about $50,000, it's the same as it was in 1997. So we haven't really seen this growth in the amount of income. There are more jobs, but they're lower-paying jobs. And let's also note that because of the increases by 15 states in minimum wage that is rather significant that we've seen this year, some of this is kind of fictitious on the economy. It's like almost punitive that some of this increase that we've seen in hourly earnings has been forced upon individuals. It isn't because of merit. It isn't because of a situation where the economy is so strong or so powerful that we're paying people more. So there are certainly cracks within the economy. Now, the 10-year Treasury being where it is, a lot of reasons for that. One of them is foreign forces as well. The globe is very interconnected. And if you're in Europe and you want to put your money away for 10 years, the German Bund is offering 10 basis points. That means if you said, hey, okay, here's $1,000, the German government will, a year after you've invested that money, send you a check for one. If you say here's €1,000, they'll send you a check after a year for €1. That's your interest. Okay. Put away €1,000, you're going to get one. And if you were in Japan, you can give them however much money you want to give them, or anywhere in Asia, and put that money away. And guess what you have to do at the end of the year? Pay them money for holding on to your money. So give them money, and you pay them to hold it. It is really an incredible situation. So that makes the U.S., even with the 10-year Treasury yield, roughly 176 right now, it makes it so attractive looking compared to what else is on the market. And that's one of the reasons why we'll continue to see downward pressure here on rates.
And that's because somebody finds that a high yield, and they're buying it?
Absolutely one of the reasons, but then the other reason is this. It's the currency trade. And if you're, think about it now, you're a European, okay? And you say, okay, well, I can invest in the German Bund here, and I can get 0.1% interest, not very appealing. Or I look across to the U.S. and I can get 1.75%, literally, you know, a difference of 17 times higher in yield. It's not just that. Because if you think about this, the U.S. dollar versus the euro today has a relationship of roughly 1.14 to 1. But many of us think that that will reach parity, meaning that a dollar will be closer to a euro. And because the reason why is because in Europe, they're continuing with a program of quantitative easing with the purpose of making the euro weaker. And here in the United States, the Fed may come under pressure to have to hike rates at least once more this year, maybe, perhaps in June, depending on what we see in continued employment and, of course, in the inflation rate. And I'll tell you, we all want to talk about inflation and how that could drive the Fed to make a move. But that would strengthen the dollar. So if the dollar were to move more towards parity, let's say a year down the road, the dollar and the euro were the same, well, not only did you make 1.75% more, but you made about 14% on the currency. So instead of getting roughly 0.1% for investing in Europe, you made between currency and yield about 16% if you did it in the U.S. Treasury. A lot of Europeans are smart. They're seeing this. Asians are seeing this. And what they are doing is they are buying treasuries hand over fist. Just look at the auctions and mortgage bonds. And this will help to keep interest rates in the U.S. down just because of foreign buying. That's not the only thing and the only reason. There are other reasons and other things that could cause interest rates to fluctuate. But our inflation levels have been very tame, and that's what helps keep rates low. But one of the reasons why inflation rates are tame is because oil prices have been very low here. And you take a look at oil today, $38, $39 a barrel as measured by West Texas Intermediate, or WTI. And if you were to say, when you take a look at oil as an inflation component, it's very important. But right now, when you look at the year-over-year numbers, you're comparing it to oil prices last year, which were at 60. So 60 to 38, it's a big drop, and that's a real big anchor or weight in keeping inflation low. If we go into June and July, we'll be comparing it to the year before at about 50, so not as much. But as we move towards the end of 2016, depending on where oil will be, now we'll be comparing it to roughly $40 per barrel. So you will be in a position where oil will no longer be an anchor on inflation, and the Fed may have to act to hike rates based upon the fact that inflation levels will go up. The Fed looks at two inflation levels. They look at CPI, Consumer Price Index, which year over year is at 2.2% on the core rate. That's above the Fed's threshold of 2%. But the Fed buries its head in the sand and gives us a line of baloney here, and they say, well, we prefer the PCE, Personal Consumption Expenditure. And I'm going to tell you, Personal Consumption Expenditure is just stupid, because Personal Consumption Expenditure ignores two things: the cost of putting a roof over your head, any home ownership expense, and yeah, sure, who needs to live in an apartment or a house? Nobody, right? We all live outside in the street, right?
Right.
And the other thing is, it ignores out-of-pocket medical expenses.
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah. None of us pay any co-pays or any medical expenses. None of us pay that, right? So why should we take that into consideration? Well, the PCE, Personal Consumption Expenditure, foolishly omits those two, and the Fed looks to PCE because it is fictitiously lower than the CPI is. It's only at 1.7% below the Fed's target, and the Fed says, ah, yeah, we prefer that. Well, it's because it gives the Fed cover. Look, Janet Yellen's running the show. She has the hammer. She's an ultra dove, and she does not want to hike rates because she is afraid that it will cause the dollar to spike. She's afraid that it will slow the economy, and most importantly, it will hurt the stock market and diminish the wealth effect. And that's what they're all afraid of. Look what happened on December 16th. The Fed hiked rates. We knew it. We called it. We said mortgage rates would go down, and they did. And we said the stock market would hate it. And we had a stock market decline that was rather precipitous of 13% between then and February 10th. Why? Because as you start to hike rates, and remember, the big thing was with the forecast was the Fed said they were going to hike four more times.
Right.
Well, that would give people an option other than the stock market to put their money. They might say, hey, I don't need to get in these riskier assets. I might be able to now be a normal person and save and get at least some sort of a rate of return. But the Fed has really hammered savers. And by the way, it's the Fed that's kept this disparity in people, where they say, oh, well, you know, we have a big disparity in the classes, and, you know, it seems like the rich are getting. Well, the Fed is the only one to blame for that. Because, you know, when you see assets like stocks and real estate going up, well, guess who has the money to buy those and guess who doesn't? And those poor people can't save any money. So this is a problem that you have right now. The Fed's created this very difficult thing to unwind.
So the Fed controls the short term. Who or what controls the 10-year?
No one controls it. It is a free market. Okay, so it's purchased by individuals here, by institutions, by retirement plans, and by foreign bonds. I mean, foreign governments purchase them as well. So no one controls it. It is truly a free market that's out there. The Fed controls the overnight lending rate. And sometimes the two move in very opposite directions, as we saw in December. When the Fed hiked rates, the 10-year Treasury dropped rather precipitously. And that's because when the Fed hiked rates, stocks hated it. Stocks sold off. The money that came out of the stock market was parked in the Treasury and mortgage stock security market. So that's what you often see happen. You have to understand what the cause and effect of these.
One of the things that's really happened over the last 8 years is there's been very little volatility. If you look at the Fed fund rate changes, the year I got in the industry, 80, 81, there was something like 20 Fed fund rate changes in that calendar year, one of those years. And now we really haven't had, it's been amazing to me the attention that one rate change has garnered in the news media from, you know, whatever it was, zero to a quarter to a half. So volatility, do you see that returning at all to interest rates?
There's still there's volatility in the interest rate environment, certainly. We have not seen it as much in the Fed interest rate changes. The last Fed rate hike cycle prior to December 16, 2015 was in 2004 to 2006, the summer of 04 to the summer of 06, that two-year span. So the Fed go ahead and hike rates from 1% of the Fed funds rate to 5.25. So a rather large, that was that measured pace, famous comment made by, you know, Greenspan Bernanke era there, where the Feds continued to hike rates virtually every meeting at a clip that caused, again, the Fed funds rate to 4.25% within those 2 years. So a lot of Fed rate hikes occurred then. But since then, the Fed went on a cutting spree, and they cut after we had hit some tough times from the financial crisis, and cut, so eventually we got to zero. It was zero to a quarter on the Fed funds target, and since then we've only had the one move. But that doesn't mean that mortgage rates haven't been volatile and haven't changed. Just look at what happened in 2013. We saw mortgage rates spike by 1.5% in a relatively short period of time. So there's still volatility in the interest rate environment, just not as much with the Fed.
Okay. Expectations of a recession, and when might that occur?
So one of the things you want to look at is you want to look at the two-year Treasury note yield and compare it to the 10-year Treasury note yield. And a pretty good marker is that when the 10-year Treasury note yield dips beneath where the two-year Treasury note yield is, a recession is in the relatively short-term future from that on a pretty consistent basis. So right now, the 10-year Treasury sits about 80 basis points above the two-year Treasury note yield. So it's still got some cushion there, but when you compare it to where it was just a couple of years ago, you could see that gap has narrowed, and it's narrowed rather significantly. So is it moving in that direction? I'm concerned about that. I think that there is a very good probability within the next 2 years that we come across a recession. And what triggers it is hard to say. Is it global concerns? Yeah. Could it be terrorist events? You know, that's out there looming. Could it be something with what is going on right now with earnings in the stock market? I mean, earnings are vulnerable. They're weak. Prices are high. P/E ratios are high. Could a couple of Fed hikes trigger it? That's probably why the Fed is terrified of hiking rates. So there are a lot of elements and factors that are out there that could trigger it. And we are at a relatively close relationship between the 10-year and the 2-year to kind of bring us to a point where there's a marker there that tells us a recession's coming. And hey, if we get close to that or at that point, then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Then everybody's going to be betting on a recession at that point, and then it almost has to happen because that's where all the experts are thinking we're going to go. So I think in this over-litigious, over-regulated government that is not very friendly towards businesses and earnings are vulnerable, we have ourselves a situation that's going to be tough. And then look, there's a lot of talk about socialism and how socialism suddenly is a good thing. You know, just ask any person who's ever lived in a socialist country if it's a good thing. And they all tell you that they're all running away from a socialist country, and why it's being thought of and promoted that could be something that's good here is beyond me. I mean, I don't care who you vote for or whatever, but you certainly should at least examine the facts, and somebody should open a history book and open their eyes and see what's going on instead of saying, hey, we get a bunch of free stuff. There's no such thing as a free lunch.
It's a little scary that he's gotten as much backing as he has. I'm not talking financial. I'm talking votes. And you're going, you gotta be kidding me.
People want stuff for free. Just look at Greece. Okay, just look at Greece. Look at Spain. I mean, look at any country. Any socialism has never, ever, ever, ever worked. It never worked, and it is designed for people to gain power and hold power by promising free stuff to individuals. It's just ridiculous. That's how you do it. So I'm going to give you a bunch of free stuff that you don't have to pay for. Vote for me and keep me in power. And that's, in essence, what socialism is. And so, you know, the free stuff has to be paid for. There's no such thing as a free lunch. And when the weight of it is too great, it topples the system. And that's why you have such problems and issues around the globe. And, you know, the thought of it coming here to the United States is something that may look an old saying. Capitalism is the worst system, except for all the others. it certainly has its flaws, but it has always been proven the best. Look, our country was founded that way. We would not have a United States. You go back to the Pilgrims. The Pilgrims initially had a form of socialism and communism, and they were starving, and it was about to be a failed experiment, and we would not have the United States until they decided to give it a last-ditch effort, and they said, what we will do now is we will issue each person their own parcel of land, and they'll each be responsible for their own. In other words, they instituted capitalism, and out of that was born the country that we now have. So, you know, it's something that people should really think about, and that's the problem. We become a country of headline readers, and the media, you know, somebody like myself who follows the media and sees what they do, the media doesn't care about the truth. They don't care about what's right. They don't care about what's good. All they care about is striking fear in your heart so that you will tune in and they get better ratings. They don't care if it's a little crock of baloney or what. That's what they're going to feed you. And individuals need to look deeper. And that should be the message that we teach our kids and everybody, that they just need to look deeper. Do not just believe what they tell you or what you read in the headline. Look deeper.
I completely agree. If we do have a recession, what do you think the 10-year T-bill interest rate might be? And then
1%. And I think that it would challenge. I think it would challenge the all-time low of 1.39. And I think that it would probably be somewhere between 1% and 1.39%. And look, it's not like it's impossible. Like I said, look at Germany.
It could be there
nobody
in a few days.
Nobody thought you'd be at 0.1%. Well, on the German Bund, nobody thought that.
Just like somebody thinking that, you know, gosh, a 3.75% mortgage rate, I think I'll wait. I mean, under 2% 10-year T-bill was unthinkable for most of my life. And now it's not even like, it doesn't even raise an eyebrow. You know, that's just remarkable. So if you have a 1% 10-year T-bill, a mortgage rate is approximately what for a 30-year?
Well, it'd be about, let's call it somewhere in the neighborhood of 0.75% lower than where it is now. So somewhere in that 2 7/8 range for 0.30-year fixed rate mortgage.
Okay. So what do you think that does to real estate?
I think it will really help support real estate prices because inventory levels are so tight and demographics are so favorable. If you look at the births in the United States, baby boomers between 1946 and 1964, there were 76 million births. That was the largest birth generation, but not all the baby boomers are here. Then you had Generation Xers, where there was an enormous dip in the birth rate. But now, with millennials coming into vogue, millennials 6 months ago passed baby boomers as the most populous generation in the United States. Even though there was 66 million of them born, the fact that most of them are still here, not only all the baby boomers are here, millennials have now become the largest birth generation, I'm sorry, the largest population segment in the United States generationally. Because of that, they are driving the economic bus. And just like Woody Iacocca discovered that when, you know, baby boomers were the ones driving the bus, and he said, okay, they're young, let's create the Mustang, and then when they had kids, let's create the minivan. We have to think about this. You know, if you want to be really, really good in anything that you do business-wise, just think about that philosophy. So what do baby boomers differentiate from millennials? So millennials, these kids grew up with Google. Okay, so what they don't need is information, but what they do need is insights and wisdom, and that's what they'll pay for. You have to, in whatever business you have, whatever you do, you have to offer not information, because they're going to get the answer for you in 3 seconds on their phone anyway. They'll be faster than you are. You have to give them the insights that they can't Google. And that's why you have to be an expert. You have to do things like listen to your show, where you're providing insights, you're providing wisdom, and you're providing things that they can't get elsewhere from Google. And if you're able to do that and convey that, then you'll gain their trust and you'll gain their business. But getting back to the demographics as it affects real estate, and if there's a recession, if you take a look at the, according to Zillow, the median age of a first-time home buyer is 33 years old. And if you take a look at the birth rates, you'll see there's an enormous dip in 2004, 5, 6, 7 of births for, that shows Generation Xers. So inventory levels were high, representing 4% of all the homes on the market. 4% of all the homes were for sale. That's a very high level of inventory. And that came just at a time where individuals couldn't sop it up because the birth rate that matched first-time home buyers were low. If you look at what's happened now, we are right at the beginning of this wave of huge births that will continue for the next 8 years, where first-time home buyers just get greater and greater and greater and greater. This is going to be an enormously successful time for real estate. There will be high demand, and right now there's only 1.88 million homes available for sale. That's a reduction of 46% in the last 5 years. And get this, remember when it was bad, 4% of all the homes on the market were for sale. Today, 1.7% of the homes that are out there are on the market for sale. It is a tiny bit of inventory. And any of your listeners that have been talking to a real estate agent, who are real estate agents, mortgage professionals, ask any realtor, what's their biggest problem? No inventory. What's the first thing we learned about the rules of economics, supply and demand? When supply is tight, like we have now, with low inventory, and we have demand is strong, like you have now, births rising, you have incomes rising, rents are expensive, relatively speaking, purchasing a home is cheap, high demand, there's only one place prices go, and that's higher. So forget what the media is saying. Every single factual or every single measurement that's out there that you would look at from a logical standpoint points to real estate values moving higher and higher and higher for the next few, well, maybe several years down the road.
We have a little bit over a minute left. When do you think, looking out a few years, when do you think we'll return to a more normal interest rate environment, when the saver gets rewarded and the mortgage interest rates are 5 or 6, or what I would consider low any in my head, but still way above where they are? How long do you think that will take, or are we going
depends
to go
on your,
are we going the route of Japan?
I was just going to say, you know, it depends on a lot of the elected officials that are in place that are going to be making these decisions or driving these decisions. And, you know, if you ask somebody in Japan and they think that they're going to be stuck like this for 25 years or 20 years, they would have definitely said no. Those of us that, you know, can remember a little ways back into the 80s, Japan was this little country that was so powerful. They were buying up everything. They were the envy of the world. Oh, I want to be like Japan. I want to be like Japan. And they just got into a situation where the stock market became overvalued, overhyped, and then they went the other way. Then they just did. So they went through that boom cycle, and then they're kind of move away from it governmentally. Their elected officials, you know, you had the Bernie Sanders kind of come out of those things, and they said, oh, we got to be really concerned. We got to step back, you know, we got to punish. And here's what's happened is that their economy is just stagnated. But now they have some other problems too. They're very, very tough on immigration. They're, you know, very protectionist. They have a much older population.
Yeah, their demographics, big problem.
Correct. Yeah. They've got other issues, not just this, but we should take a look at that and learn from it. And that's what we said earlier, you know, open up the history book, pay attention, read deep, past the headlines, and look at what's out there. And you know what? People, your listeners are smart. People in general, they're smart. If they just looked at it, it's not that difficult to see.
Barry, I've enjoyed our time together. Thanks so much for joining us. We've been speaking with Barry Habib, and he is the owner of MBS Highway, and you can find that at www.m.
And by the way, if you subscribe to MBS Highway, you get what we just talked about every single day, the video I do and information that we put out there every single day.
I am joining today, just so you know. Thanks, Barry.
Thanks, brother.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.